Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Everyone to a very special Brainstorm Brewery. I realize these are all very special episodes, but this is even more special than most because we have a special guest. We have Chris Anderson, winner of last week's Legacy Star City Games Open, joining
Hello.
Us.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going well, Chris. We have the usual gang of idiots, Ryan Bouchard and Corbin Hostler.
Hello, idiots.
Joining us tonight. You could call them that because you're a guest. This is Brainstorm Brewery, episode 56, if memory serves. Also, looking at last week was 55. That was a good clue. Marcel will not be joining us, so it's up to me to keep us on track, which is generally not the best of ideas, but we are going to soldier on and talk to Chris a little bit about his deck, what he thinks about the future of this deck and the future of the Legacy format, and why don't we get started with picks of the week. Get that right out of the way, because I'm eager to talk about this deck.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Let's let the guests go first.
Oh, no, you guys go ahead. I don't want to go first. I'm too nervous.
That is the typical response, actually.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Let's make Corbin go.
All right, I got one.
He knows why.
Well, this is a little more blanket of a pick, and it's one we've talked somewhat about before, but I'm just going to go ahead and lump it together here, and it's all non-mythic cards in Modern Masters. If you notice, like, we've talked a lot about Modern Masters, and we didn't know exactly how it would affect it with effect prices, but what's happened is the uncommons and commons are coming down for sure, and the rares have dipped down just a little. So my pick really here is if you still have any of the, you know, the kitchen things type cards and you can get a good price for them, get rid of them. But if not, it's keep an eye on these because I think in the next, you know, couple weeks, 2 weeks after Vegas here, they're probably going to bottom out, at which point you want to start picking them back up. The mythics for Modern Masters so far haven't really moved at all in price, so I don't really think there's much of a play there. But I'm looking to pick up the commons and uncommons and even some of the rares as they bottom out in the next week or two.
Well, that was very blankety, Corbin. I feel bad for anybody who had one specific card in Modern Masters picked out. Corbin did mine because he did all of them.
Well, I mean, there's certainly, you know, I can make a blanket statement like that because it needs to be said, but there's certainly some that present better opportunities than others.
So what you're saying is there is enough material to make a whole segment out of and you just shot your wad on your pick of the week. I like it.
Well, my point is there's plenty more in depth now that I've set us up.
Okay. Well, what do we got? Ryan Bouchard?
I can't go next. Corbin stole mine.
I can go next, I guess.
All right.
I'm willing to. I'll jump in. All right. Mine's not really from Modern Masters, but I think that Terminus is pretty good in Standard right now. Like, a lot of the Aristocrats decks are performing pretty well. I know a lot of the best players in the room this weekend in Columbus are going to be playing that deck. The Junk Aristocrats, and Act 2 won last weekend, I think, also. So Terminus is a really good wrath effect against them, obviously, because they don't get to, like, rebuy on any of their creatures. You know, all of their like, Voice of Resurgence, Young Wolf, Doomed Traveler, all those guys, they don't really benefit at all from being put on the bottom of their deck. So I think it's a pretty solid wrath effect in Standard right now. It's I know Adrian Sullivan top-aided the World Magic Cup qualifier in Chicago last week, and he had 4 Terminus in his Esper control deck. He said they were really good. Also, it was like, what, a $12 card? I think it was a $12 card, and when it was getting heavy played in Legacy.
Yeah.
And that's a really good deck, the countertop deck. Like, the metagame isn't particularly great for it right now, but I'm sure it will be at some point later on in the future, and once it is, it'll go back up to that price again, I'm sure. So, I think it's just a solid card to have, you know, and
when the price gets this low, like, I think it's going to go back up again eventually. So hold on to it and move it once it goes back up.
What does the countertop deck do against Abrupt Decay? That's what I've always wondered. As soon as they printed Abrupt Decay, I was like, well, nice counterbalance.
I mean, I don't think it's stone dead. It's obviously weak to Abrupt Decay, but, like, you can do other stuff. You know, like, you got Planeswalkers and things. It's only as good as Abrupt Decay. It's only as bad as Abrupt Decay decks are good. So if Legacy ever gets to a point where, like, the bug decks aren't particularly good, then, like, you can play countertop again, you know?
Sure.
So, and like, Legacy is very cyclical with all of its decks on, as to whether or not they're good.
I'm seeing no Progenitus come back, so I'm definitely with you on that. Sure. Actually, I love the return of no Progenitus.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised that deck came back because I thought it was dependent on having a Mental Misstep format. But yeah, I mean, it's a powerful deck and does powerful things, so I'm sure that there are some situations where it's going to be a good deck.
Okay, Ryan, if you don't mind, I'm actually going to go next. Okay. I think what you said about the Junk Aristocrats deck, which I really like, being good, I think Veral's the Scarstripe is criminally low right now. That is a card that's still gettable at $1 to $1.50, and he's retail as much as 3 or 4 some places. So there's a big price disparity there. I think Veral's is very good for casuals. I think he does a lot of fun stuff they like. I think he's nuts in standard. He does everything you want Junk Aristocrats to do because I didn't get this right away. I thought, you know, you've only got the Cartel Aristocrats as sac outlets, and someone's like, no, Veral is a sac outlet too.
Yep.
So he is a good advantage engine. He's a sac outlet. He does everything you want that deck to do. Compound that with the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, but a Veral's deck top 16, the same event you won?
I believe that's true. Yeah, I think he lost playing for top 8.
Yeah, so he he's running Stifle Knot. Yep.
Yeah, and Death Shadow. There's quite a few Ravnica duels in there. So it was pretty cool.
It seems like this first or second time anybody even tried to make that deck, and he almost top 8 with it. Stifle Knot was good before, I think. But he's playing a lot of good green-black stuff. He's, you know, playing the Abrupt Decays and the Deathrite Shamans instead of, I don't know that Trinket Mage was necessarily junk in a deck with Vraxian Dreadnought, but just he cut down all with the best blue stuff.
Right, he wasn't the greatest. Trinket Mage wasn't the greatest in that deck because that deck couldn't really use a 2-2 very well.
Yeah, and he didn't really do anything else.
Right.
Like, he could get, like, your random one of Engineered Explosives or something like that, but for the most part, he was...
Yeah, you're only playing him for the tutor, and a 3-mana tutor is a little loose.
Right, so going back, I like to pick the Veral's pick because, like we've talked about before, Dragon's Maze being a third set, a small set, nobody really cares about it right now because everyone's drafting Modern Masters. It seems like, you know, if this, over the next several months, continues to perform strong and nobody's opening Dragon's Maze anymore, that's a $5 card all of a sudden at least.
Which is crazy because he was a Maze Runner, so they gave a bunch out for
him.
So the fact that, like, he could even reach 3 or 4 on, like, any website just seems insane. And that's, you know, with him getting a little bit of adoption. I think casuals love this card. I think, you know, he could even be a pretty decent EDH general. I don't really know. I think the fact that, like, someone tried the Legacy deck, the fact that it's really good and what I consider one of the best standard decks right now, I think he's solid. And you can still get him at a $1.15 trade because everyone's like, oh, he's just a Maze Runner or whatever. So, that's my call. And I'm stalling to give Ryan time to think.
Right. I wanted to mention another thing. Didn't Dragon's Maze not sell very well comparatively? The guy who runs my LGS said. Like, he's not selling very much Dragon's Maze at all. So, like, not nearly as much as that is getting opened.
Plus it's not drafted. Like,
right.
RTR was drafted 3 at a time, and this is drafted just the one.
I mean, there's not as many good cards in the set. People don't want to open it to have the cards.
It really is just the Voice of Resurgence.
Yeah, there's Voice of Resurgence and a bunch of crap.
I mean, it's like Avazin Restored from a year ago, only, like, even more amplified because of, you know, Modern Masters cutting it off.
Yeah.
So, like, it's that kind of, like, it's one of those sets that just the way it worked out, it is just primed to have these breakout cards that just explode overnight because there's so few out there in comparison.
I would buy your Varals on TCG Player or eBay right now because the people that have a lot of copies, it's a race to the bottom on price just to dump the things, and they're going to be a little slower to recover when they realize that the price is going back up.
Yeah, I believe on Star City, they're pretty high right now.
Yeah, I think Star City's really leading the way with Wow, six, okay. Yeah. So that it's, you know, they know it's a yeah, key component of the deck.
Right. I mean, I'm not surprised at all, because Brad's been piloting it, so, and he works with them, you know, so I'm not surprised at all that they have it that much.
For those of you out there, when he says Brad, he means pro player Brad Nelson.
Brad Nelson, yeah.
Brad Nelson, with whom Chris is on a first-name basis.
Right, yeah. Such name drops.
We don't get to call him Brad. I have to call him Mr. Nelson.
You can call him Bard Narson?
No, I have to call him Mr. Nelson, and if I don't, he cocks his fist like he's going to hit me.
You should call him Mr. Narson the next time.
Bard Narson. Yeah,
well, make sure you do that when I'm watching, Jason. That would be the most fun.
Yeah, then I have to bow meekly and walk away with my eyes cast to the ground. Such is my station. But it's cool that you get to call him Brad.
Fair enough.
Ryan, what do you do for us?
Quit stalling, Ryan Bouchard.
Oh, wait, you mean I get to be on the podcast now?
Is your pick of the week a new microphone?
That's a good pick. I like that pick.
I haven't actually mentioned why I'm on a new microphone, but let's just say it involves 2 hours on the phone with India and me moving into a new place and not on the internet for 2 more days. That's why I'm on my phone. Some of you who listened to us, 6 months, 8 months ago may remember this terrible noise. And I do apologize. Next week I will have internet and, well, I'll actually be on my way to Vegas, so I'll be in a hotel.
I'm actually pretending this is classy and we're on the BBC World Service and you're, like, phoning us from the front lines in Fallujah or something. And that's
okay,
why the phone sounds all groovy. So we have Ryan joining us from Afghanistan tonight.
That's legit.
Yeah. Anyway, Ryan, enough stalling.
Anyway, so, mine is another, you know, kind of throwback to Modern Masters, but not for actual cards in Modern Masters itself. But I started looking at some of the cards that, you know, people had anticipated the reprint of, and therefore, like, the price kind of just dropped down a little bit. Cards like Mutavault, where you saw the retail not really fall too much, but a lot of them on eBay were going down to the point where they were getting, you know, $25 you could find Mutavault for. And I think that's a fine pickup, because with, you know, all of these, you know, modern cards coming back out, people are going to be looking to play these decks. And though, you know, Mutavault is not a staple, per se, in the format right now, I think that it's a card that will always see play, and if they don't reprint in a core set, which I think would be difficult to do, just for flavor purposes, I think that card is only going to continue to rise.
Yeah, I like that. That makes a lot of sense, because it's like, the card's powerful, obviously, so there's going to be some points in the format where it's going to be played in a top-tier deck at some point. And when it does, like, it's gonna spike. So.
Alright guys, what I'm gonna do right now is I'm going to make a proclamation, and if I'm right, I'm gonna look like a genius, and if I'm wrong, I'm gonna pretend I was joking the whole time. So, since Mutavault is in fact a sliver, it's conceivable that it's an M4. No, you're gonna cut me off before I get M14 out of my mouth?
Yep.
It could, is it possible that there's gonna be a good card in M14, and this will be the good card?
Put one changeling in M14.
It doesn't say anything about Changeling on it. It has no keywords tying it to
Lore Wimble. It doesn't say Shapeshifter, but,
I'm probably wrong, but in case I'm right, I'll pretend I was serious, and if I'm wrong, I'll pretend I was joking! Well, M14, you heard it here first, folks.
Sounds like you got your bases covered.
I mean, this was my advice with Mutavault, was to wait, because now we know it's not a Modern Masters. We'll know in a couple weeks if it's in M14. Just wait until then and then pick them up. I mean, you don't really want to take that chance, get in on them now if it is going to be an M14.
But there's enough time between the release of M14 and the start of the modern season that
I don't know. How good do you think that card would be in Standard?
Pretty good.
I don't think the answer is very good.
No.
I don't think it'd be very good at all.
It would be fair.
It'd be average. I don't even think it would get too much play, because the aggro decks are 3-color decks right now. It might get played next year, but I mean, right now in this metagame, I don't see where it's going to be good, because you've got very powerful late-game colorless lands already from Innistrad and Dark Ascension.
Yeah.
And those are all better in those decks, in the slower decks, than a Mutavault would be. And in the aggressive decks, they can't afford to play colorless lands. You know, like, Nihavos can't afford to play Mutavault.
Yeah, one reason only one reason is the new legend rule. It's going to be really difficult to deal with opposing planeswalkers and these, you know, blue-white control decks and stuff like that. So I feel if Mutavault isn't going to be main deck play, it's probably going to be sideboard play for the mirror matches. I feel like it's a very good way, and really an unanswerable way, to deal with your opponent's planeswalkers.
It deals with some planeswalkers, but not the higher loyalty ones. I mean,
it does keep them off alternating. I mean, it allows you
to win the Planeswalker race, because you pull the Jason Plus trying to get to the ultimate, or if you know, you're just trying to utilize card draw, it's really difficult if your opponent's hitting it for two every time.
That's fair, but like, I don't know, right now I don't see too many legend ruling on Planeswalkers and Standard going on right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how important that's gonna be. It could be a world where that is important, and in that case, I could definitely see Mutavault being like a decent sideboard card for those situations. But, I have a feeling that if Mutavault is an M14, it'll spike early. Or, like, there'll be a bunch of hype over it. Everybody will be like, oh my god, this card's insane. And then a month from now, it will not be all that hot.
Right.
You know, it'll be like Pithing Needle in 10th edition.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, like, and the thing with Mutavault is, going back to, like, what we were talking about is, okay, say, you know, you don't get him now, and then the M14 spoiler comes out all the way, and we say that, okay, Mutavault's not in here. So, like, at that point, you know it's a good pickup, but you still have, like, a matter of months, like, 4 to 5 months before Modern season hits,
yeah.
So there'll be a window to pick him up. So, like, I don't think there's any reason going on it now when you can just wait and remove some risk.
But all joking aside, I think it's unlikely enough that if you wanted to start picking them up now, you're fine, but you have such a big window.
Agreed.
Like, why do it?
Right. All I'm saying is that if it is an M14, I would wait a little bit before picking them up, because I think there is a very good chance that they'll be very good a year from now once all of the, I guess the multicolored stuff wouldn't rotate with it, but, it's a powerful enough card, like I said, in regards to Modern, that there definitely could be some worlds where it's very good, and then once it becomes very good, it'll spike. Like, I don't see it being particularly great in this particular format right now.
Yeah, but I think that's a good point.
It actually seems safe to pick up either way right now, because you said it yourself, if it does get reprinted, it's going to spike in the short term. I mean,
yeah, in the short term.
Instantaneous, you know, oh god, we gotta get our mutables. And if you you start picking up now, as long as you hit that window, you still did fine.
Yeah, I say if you pick them up now and then they announce that it's in the set, I'd sell them immediately and then buy them up again in like 2 months.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that, whether it's mythic or rare, I don't care.
Right.
I think that you absolutely dump them as soon as it's announced as spoilers, but if it's not, then you already have them, and you're not trying to, you know, fight for the ones that are out there. And if it is, then you get to make some quick cash on them. So I think either way, Mutavault's a great pickup right now. But,
okay.
So, fast pick of the week. Well, where do you want to go from here?
Well, I'd like to talk with Chris a little bit about the deck he played this weekend.
Okay.
And then we will smoothly segue into that. He said go without him. I don't know if that means record the whole thing without him or start without him.
Like, worst case scenario, we just do the three of us because Corbin's worthless anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to add. He's there as filler, to be honest.
Okay. Fair enough.
This is getting recorded, and Marcel's going to hear this, so.
That's fine.
That'll be fine. That'll be our own little private joke. So, Chris, I've been wondering, like, if Tezzerator is like, a real thing. Because every once in a while, the deck will, like, win. And then everyone's like, oh, it's a fluke.
Right.
So we don't know if we should go deep on Tezzeret or not.
Okay, I honestly don't know. There are two cards in the deck that are worth speculating on. Actually, three. Tezzeret's one of them. Also, the Antiquities card, the Tinker. Transmute Artifact.
Yeah.
Because the supply's so low on that card. And then the third one's Chalice of the Void, but Chalice doesn't seem like a super good spec because it just got reprinted.
Yeah.
But the deck is very, very good.
So I guess that's what we need to know. Like, we needed somebody who's got experience with the deck to just come on and talk about it. Because you go to the QS forums, and everyone's like, oh, I think we should spec on Tezzeret, and just nobody knows. So I figured somebody with an intimate knowledge of the deck that's a much better player than all of us combined.
I don't know much about the economics of it, but I do know that the deck's very, very good. I also don't know whether or not that'll translate to people playing it or not. Because, I don't know, like, I hear a lot of people saying how cool they thought it was, but they didn't actually pick it up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of expensive cards in it. It's like a $2,500 deck. So if you don't have access to those cards, it's probably not going to be cool enough to buy the whole thing.
So what makes it $2,500? I should actually just...
Jaces and Caesar.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And
Caesar 200, Jaces are 150s. Also, I'm thinking about adding a... you can put an Abyss in the deck also, which is another $200, or possibly even multiple.
Well, the Italian ones are a little cheaper.
Yeah, they're $125. I'm going to try one this weekend because it seems like it's really good against Deathblade. And that matchup, like, I didn't play against it last weekend, but I, like, played
about an hour and a half against Lauren Nolan on Saturday because we were bored, and he was winning the majority of the game ones. So.
Oh, and did you just, like, proxy bring it in then, or?
No, I know that the card seems good against that deck. Like, they win their games by with their creatures, you know? Like, their card advantage engine is Jace and creatures, and I can deal with Jace a lot more easily than Dark Confidant. Dark Confidant's really tough. So being able to get rid of, like, I don't know, all their guys, you know, Deathrite Shamans, Confidant, Stone Fortunistic, Batter Skull Token.
Sure. Okay, I'm just going to try one more time to text Corbin. If not, we can just start this fucking thing. Like, he wants to join late.
Yeah, also, article just came up, so be sure to check that out.
Freeside?
Yep. I'm doing the Leaving a Legacy column. Yeah, Cedric's just started that. It's just, like, people who did well in Legacy tournaments. He just wants them to, like, a guest writer type of a column.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I guess you can't do much better than you did.
First place is pretty good. it's not the fact that I won that I'm happy about. It's the fact that I won with my deck, you know? Like, I don't like playing... I like playing my deck, my type of decks in Legacy, you know? So, being successful, right. That is really nice.
Well, I gotta ask, though, I mean, obviously, like, when you win a tournament, you feel like there's something you could have done better, but is there anything, like, that you just feel dead by board cards or anything like that in the deck?
As far as the list itself? I mean, I think the main is fantastic. Like I said earlier, I think I want to try an Abyss. I think it's a little bit fluid, depending on what you expect as far as, like, slots. But, I mean, I didn't play the best. The deck carried me, not the other way around. Definitely made several mistakes.
How do you feel about, like, is this a deck that is easy to get into, or is there something, like, you need to have played prior decks similar to it to really know how to pilot it?
I don't know. I don't really... I know how to play every deck. So, it's just, like, I've played so many games of Magic that it just kind of all... Every deck is intuitive to me, with very few exceptions. So I don't really know how to judge that for people, you know?
Okay. Fair enough. I mean,
it's,
I guess, the easiest way for you to compare it is, would it be, like, you know, can you name some other decks that it's about as difficult to play? Because, I mean, obviously you kind of have a scale, like, mono red, though, sure. You know, difficult to master is easy to play. And then you have decks all the way to, you know, perhaps,
right.
Like, Dredge, where
it's got a relatively low floor.
It's
got a pretty low floor to play it to, like, competitive efficiency.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you just play turn one Jalas and you win the game against half of the people in the format, you know? Like, once you understand how the lines work, the intricacies aren't as big of a deal because what it does is so powerful.
Right, right.
So what would you say is giving you the best advantage engine in the deck then?
Chalice is absurd. Chalice is absolutely epic, ridiculous right now. You know, like Jeff Hoogland's deck, the
four color loam. I was just going to bring Hoogland up because he wrote a tournament report on Reddit, like, what he was doing. He was like, yep, game one, Chalice on one, and then we shuffle up for game two. It seemed like it just shuts out so many decks in the format completely.
Yeah, Chalice is absurd. The problem with Chalice is the Chalice decks are bad for the most part.
Yeah.
And I think Hoogland's done a nice job of building a Chalice deck that's consistent, and that's what I was trying to do, is build a Chalice deck that was consistent. And I think I did I think I was successful in doing that. So, the Chalice is the reason that I built the deck. Tezzeret's the best Planeswalker in a vacuum. I think it's straight up just better than Jace the Mind Sculptor, except you have to build your deck around it, which isn't
right
easy.
And it pretty much, there aren't a whole lot of ways to build around it.
Correct. And Thapter Sword is surprisingly resilient to what Legacy has to offer, like, as far as... Like, decks can't really handle it, you know? Like, I played against Jund, and he just, like, put me down to no cards except for one Thopter, one Sword in my graveyard, and, like, I had a Dimir Signet in play. Like, sacked the Dimir Signet, made some Thopters, tapped my mana, made a bunch more Thopters, and, like, he was just dead 3 turns later. Like, it didn't matter that he hymned me a bunch and cast 2 Bloodbraid Elves. It just didn't matter.
Okay, that sounds pretty miserable for the Jund player, which I'm
right.
fine with.
And all kinds of decks. Like Deathblade can't handle it. They have to keep it off the board as soon as you keep... Like, any kind of Stoneforge Mystic deck, I'm pretty sure. Like, sometimes they run, like, a 1-of Vindicate or something, but if they don't, like, counter your pieces or make sure that you don't, like, get to them, like, through, like, I don't know, Land Destruction or whatever, like, if you can stick a Thopter Sword combo, it's, you're not going to lose.
Sure, I could see that.
Like, they can't All the good graveyard removal against that isn't really played too much, with, like, the exception of Rest in Peace sometimes. Like, nobody really plays Leyland of the Void anymore. It's all, like, Surgical Extractions and Deathrite Shamans. You know, there aren't very many Scavenging Oozes right now. Like, Green Sun Zenith's not a very good card in this environment.
Yeah, I really noticed Maverick has fallen off a lot. And
Yeah, it's because Maverick's not a good deck. It's an inherently bad deck. But, I mean, that's my opinion. It obviously wins a lot, but it has won a lot.
I feel like there's a lot of misconceptions about it. Can you address the conception that everybody has right now that it has a miserable combo matchup, or can you not really speak much to Maverick as
I don't play very much Maverick because I refuse to play Mother of Ruins. I think we have 12,000 cards to choose from, and if you pick Mother of Ruins of all those cards, then you're just insulting your opponents.
I think of it as I think it's the one of the better Knight of the Reliquary decks, and I don't think about it as
that's
the
fair.
Best
deck. Sure, I feel like if you want to be playing Knight of the Reliquary, though, like play Hoogland's deck. You could play Chalice too. So I don't. It might be a little more like Knight of the Reliquary decks in general might be a little more viable once the new Legend rules change with the Thespian Stage Dark Depths thing.
Yeah,
I don't know for sure though. Like it's not my wheelhouse. You know, I like to play like for the most part combo decks. So I don't really know the intricacies of those particular decks. I know how to beat them, but, I don't know. I've never picked up Maverick, so.
Well, this is a bit of a departure from what we typically do, but if you want to just run us through your deck list, I have it pulled up here. If you want to talk about what over or underperformed and what you think is maybe you think could go up based on it being adopted by more decks.
Okay.
We can start. So the Baleful Strix is the first card listed here.
Baleful Strix, I mean, I love me an Elvish Visionary, obviously. Like, I've played tons and tons of combo elves, so it doesn't take much convincing to play a Baleful Strix for me. It's a really good defensive card. Like, it lets you protect your Planeswalkers very efficiently. It replaces itself, which is great. It gives you card advantage through Sword of the Meek, because it is a 1-1 creature. So if you have a Sword of the Meek in your graveyard and you cast a Baleful Strix, it goes right on there.
Ooh,
so
nice.
A lot of times you can just go, I can cast Thirst for Knowledge, I discard a Sword of the Meek, cast a Baleful Strix, put the Sword of the Meek on the Baleful Strix. So,
do you find yourself making that a 5-5 a lot?
Every now and then. A lot of times I prefer making other cards 5-5s. Like when I need an evasion creature, sure, I'll make the Baleful Strix a 5-5. But usually I don't mind just making like a Chalice a 5-5 or a Signet a 5-5 instead. That way I get a blocker to protect my Planeswalker still. Because when I minus a Tezzeret, it'll go down to 2 counters and it's pretty vulnerable. So I want a blocker still, unless they just have no creatures on the board. So usually the Baleful Strix plays defense and I'll just bash with my Dimir Signet instead. Because 5-5 is bigger than every other creature, every other like creature in the format other than like Knight of the Reliquary, I guess. But you're winning combat no matter what, so I'm okay with them not taking damage if they're losing creatures.
So he's at $18 right now.
Baleful Strixes?
Yeah. So okay. So barring a reprint, what do you think the ceiling is on a guy like this that's right now only available in Plane Chase?
I honestly have no idea. Like, the supply's absurdly low, right? Do you know about, like, approximately, is it about as much as a normal Mythic Rare?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Like, there are twice as many Baleful Strixes as Scavenging Oozes until M14 comes out. And that's pretty much all I know. That was a 2-of in Knight of the Ninjas, I believe?
Yes, it was. But, like, yeah, I just don't know how many Knight of the Ninjas packs were released. It all depends on what that supply is, you know.
So it hit about $50 on eBay, and it's holding steady around there.
Oh, the unopened Knight of the Ninjas, you mean? Or
yeah, did I say Knight of the Reliquary?
No. I thought you meant... I wasn't sure whether you meant Baleful Strix the card or Knight of the Ninjas the
well,
pack.
Well, there are two Strixes for every one Knight of the Ninjas. Yeah, Knight of the Ninjas itself.
For a lot of it. And it's got like it's got some other stuff in there that's reasonably good too. It's got like the Clone Ninja. It's got the Higura the Steel Wind. Like some other good stuff in there.
Yeah,
so
I think
I'm not
the
$50
I think the Chaos Reigns is about the same. And Chaos Reigns is a little bit more stacked. Like
that's the Cascade one, right?
Yeah, that was the Cascade one. So that's got the Shardless Agents as a 2-of, and it's got
Shardless
the
Agent $15 still, or has it gone up also? Because I know Baleful Strix used to be $15.
Yeah, I feel like Shardless Agent is selling for between $13 and $15 on eBay, so it's probably a little bit more on Cool Stuff Inc.
Interesting. I'm a little surprised that it's that Shardless Agent isn't more expensive than Baleful Strix, because like Shardless Bug is like a real deck, you know, like.
Sure.
Yeah. People are winning tournaments with that stuff, like Harry Corvessi, top 8. Did he top 8 two Grand Prix? I don't know. I know he did very well two Grand Prix with it. Like, JRT won the Invitational with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that just seems like a Jerry T kind of deck.
So far, and they've got very similar supply levels, so I'm surprised that Baleful Strix is the more popular card.
At least, you know, I've actually seen, you know, people run these two cards together, too, so.
Yeah, for sure. They do very well together. But yeah,
really, there's really nothing in the Shardless Bug deck that you don't want to cascade into, and I think that's the best thing about it, being at three mana. It's right. I think it's better than Bloodbraid Elf. You know, just being at the mana cost it's at.
Yeah, it's not just that. Also, the fact that it's blue is really nice. Sure. The fact that it's an artifact hasn't been taken advantage of yet, but that's another thing to note.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, for a little bit, while I was while this deck was still in incubation, I considered playing a bug version of it so that I could play...
So you could play Shardless Agent?
So I could play Shardless Agent, too, since it was an artifact, but decided it wasn't really worth the inconsistency, considering I'm playing seven Sol lands.
Yeah, that's something you could piss to Force of Will, though, so...
Right, it is pitchable force.
Would you say Mind Sculptor over or underperformed?
I'd say he performed about as what I expected him to. They're just like Tezzeret's 5-8, to be honest. Or Tezzeret is Jace's 5-8, I don't know. The card's fantastic in the deck, you know. Like, the deck is designed to take advantage of getting a Planeswalker out before your opponent can really deal with the Planeswalker. You can get it out on turn 2 with a Signet and a Sol land, or turn 3 with a Signet or a Sol land. In a lot of those situations, you can just go turn 2 Chalice, turn 3 Planeswalker. Like, it's really difficult for most decks to deal with that. So I think it performs better than it does in most decks.
Now, I'm looking at your list. You don't really have many ways to play the turn 1 Chalice. You got the Ancient Tomb and the City of Traitors.
Yeah, seven ways.
Okay.
Seven.
So, just land-based, but you're not running right. any artifact mana that all...
Yeah, I'd say you get a turn 1 Chalice about, like, what, 30% of the time?
And that's the line of play, then, if you get that?
If you get that against, like, half the decks in the format, you just win the game instantly.
Sure.
You know, Rogue Delver is, like, the only spells in their entire deck are Daze, Force of Will, and Tarmogoyf. Every other card in their deck is a one-drop, you know? Storm, there's no way they can... I think game one, they might just be straight up cold to it, turn one, and Chalice. Like, they'd have to have a very good LED hand or something. Like, all of their Ponders and Brainstorms and whatnot are turned off, too, so they can't really dig for an answer very well, even in the post-board games. They just have to have their Abrupt Decays. It just does so much. Like, a blue deck's not being able to cast Brainstorm or Ponder really hinder them.
That seems fair. That does actually seem... really brutal. I think the $60,000 question everybody wants to know is Tezzeret.
Yeah.
Is it the real deal? Is its ability, it's starting to pop up in Modern a little bit.
Sure.
With Tezzeret being, roughly $15 on Star City sold
right.
out, do you think there's room for it to grow? Basically, is this deck kind of the future of Legacy?
Well, I don't think Tezzeret was sold out this time last week on Star City at $15.
Still quite a few on Cool Stuff at $15.
That's true. And as I say, to the flip side, there's a lot of other websites that have them for even less than $15, and they're not sold out yet, though.
Sure.
So maybe it just means that the people that are interested in this deck tend to shop at Star City. I don't know. But I think Tezzeret is an incredibly powerful card. Like I said earlier, I think in a vacuum it's the best Planeswalker ever printed. You just need to have a deck built around it. I think the supply is just really low. Like, Mirrodin Besiege was a second set, mm-hmm. so that means there's less of it drafted than everything else, I think. Well,
it wasn't that exciting set either.
But yeah, and it wasn't that exciting of a set, so not too much of it was opened, I don't think. And it's a Mythic Rare, and it hasn't never been reprinted like a dual decks or anything like that. So they've already done a Tezzeret dual deck, so it probably won't get reprinted in a dual decks again. Like, I don't think they've ever done a duplicate Planeswalker for a dual decks before. So I don't see why.
Not until they run out, I think.
Yeah, I don't see why they'll do that anytime soon. So I don't expect it to get reprinted in a promotional sense that way. I think the supply is going to be relatively low. I'd say it's a decent spec at 15. I'd probably buy them.
Okay, so you'd bet your own money, basically.
I'd be willing to bet my own money. I'm not big on the specking myself, but I picked up my place up, so.
Now, looking at the rest of your list, you got four Chalices. Again, that's, you know, in Modern Masters.
Right.
We really have yet to see how much Modern Masters is going to depress prices.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like,
but for right now, it actually stuff has gone down a lot more than we thought that it would, but okay. That could be just that everybody that was going to dump stuff ran right to eBay.
That's fair.
It's possible. There is a second wave slated of distribution. There's not a second print run that I know of, but there's a second distribution. But nobody knows. It could be the shops that got 18 boxes are getting one. We just don't know. Right. And then they're talking about leftover product from GP Vegas. But anytime you say leftover product from GP Vegas,
I don't expect
the person that you're having the conversation with starts laughing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Are they up to anything now? Are they up to like 2,400?
Yeah, I think it's the second or third largest North American Grand Prix
already.
Just on pre-reg already. Yeah, it's insane. Some people that I actually respect, Aaron Forsyth, TSG, I really respect those guys' opinion. They both said they thought Providence, because it's on the East Coast, because it's a team format, they said that they thought Providence would be a larger turnout than GP Vegas, and wish we'd bet them on it.
Yeah, right? Oh, geez. Okay, so I just clicked on Transmute Artifact. I mean, I might be jumping ahead a little bit.
No, that's perfectly fine.
Okay, it's $30 on Star City Sold Out. It was not that, like, yesterday.
Okay, so...
It just doubled the price on that card.
Well, let's check.
It has been $15 forever, because I've been watching that one, because that was one I was expecting to go up, because of supply. It's in Antiquities, so it's an incredibly low-supply card. It never got reprinted.
There was one on Cool Stuff for $18, so...
I recommend buying Transmute Artifacts.
Yeah.
For if you can find them for 15 everywhere you can.
Shops. They're probably being shops for 15 for the next.
Yeah.
I bet eBay's got some copies.
So yeah, pick them up now.
This
pick them up
fast. This doesn't move all that fast. So this cast goes live on Friday. I've got a feeling with it being Wednesday tonight. I don't think they're all going to get bought out in the next 2 days unless I do it tonight.
Yeah, there's a good chance.
So yeah, that seems like a very good spec. Wow, $30 sold out. You talked about Lodestone Golem.
Yeah.
Some work. And I don't know that there's much room to spec on that. It's been printed.
Yeah, it's a dollar. Archenemy. It's a dollar. And it's been printed, reprinted twice? Twice, is that right?
Yeah, I want to say it's in Archenemy, and it was in, what, Worldwake? Probably.
Yes, it was originally in Worldwake.
Worldwake, Archenemy. Yeah, I think that's so. But you just, you know, in terms of something that might trade out, that's not terrible to have. But you want to talk about how much work that did for you?
I mean, it didn't do much work for me personally, because the matchups that I had. But my friend John Douglas played the same deck I did. He played against Storm 3 times, which was my only loss at Swiss when I played the deck in Nashville. It was something that I specifically wanted to work on. And he beat Storm 3 times that day. Like, he went 3-0 against it. So, and he said Lodestone Golem was the reason that that was happening. It provides a very quick clock against them. They can't duress it out of your hand. They can't abrupt decay it out of sideboard, because they're definitely bringing in abrupt decays for your chalices and your Trinisphere. And, like, yeah, once you put that on the board, they only have about 3 more turns to live. And you can get it down on turn 2. So it's good against all kinds of combo decks for basically those reasons, you know. You get that into play, they're on a quick clock. You can get it in play really early. You know, it doesn't actually affect a lot of your cards, because it's non-artifact spells, as opposed to, like, a Sphere of Resistance, which is just everything, you know? So, yeah, that Lodestone Golem, I got it against Belcher once, and it won me the game. He put a Belcher into play, and then I cast Lodestone Golem the next turn, and he had a land and a pedal in play with 1 card left in his hand, and he couldn't, all of his mana sources that he was getting were, like, spell mana sources, you know, like rituals and stuff.
Sure.
So they weren't actually,
they weren't gonna net him mana. Nice.
Yeah. And then I cleaned up the pedal with a Ratchet Bomb, you know, kept him from, eventually I think I might have drawn a force or something, and he was just dead with a Belcher on the board for 3 turns. Didn't matter.
That's dirty.
Yeah. So,
Here's another, I'm sorry to interrupt, go ahead.
No, I was finished.
Okay. Here's another. Well, without looking, what do you think City of Traders is right now?
Oh,
on Star City.
30?
Yeah, it's 50. Sold out.
Wow.
So that's it seems like maybe they took those out of stock to increase the price. You can still get a couple City of Traders for about 35 on Cool Stuff, but I don't expect that to last till the end of the week.
Jeez, that's absurd.
So these are two cards. I'm not going to blame your deck 100%. For City Traders, what I am going to suggest is the Transmute Artifact is probably due in large part to the popularity of your deck and how well.
Yeah, most likely.
So,
I guess Tomb did get reprinted, so it didn't go up too much. Yeah.
So the main takeaway lesson here is I think Tezzeret is probably the best spec just because of how low it is and how high it could go. But there are so few Transmute Artifacts out there.
In the store, yeah, it's on 15 in the store, but it's sold out. There's 22 in stock for 14 for SPs.
Yeah, so. And, you know, Cool Stuff's got them. We like to talk about Cool Stuff's prices because that site's been very good to us. And you can crank up that discount that I've been doing for years because that's where we used to buy our boxes.
Okay.
But, you know, they don't pay me extra for talking about them a ton.
Back in the day.
What's that?
My dad used to buy boxes from them back in the day when you can get them for, like, $75, $70, you know?
Yeah.
Like the good old days.
And then if you spent over $200, they'd ship for free.
Yep.
Yeah, good times. So yeah, but you can still get some cities for under $40 on Cool Stuff. I expect eBay to take a little bit to catch up to the $50 that City Traders is on Star City. City gets played on a lot of decks, really, so I think it was only a matter of time with Caracas
sense.
Going up, then Rashidunport. I really think it's just systematically. Yeah.
Is it on the do not reprint list? On the reserve list or whatever?
City Traders, I would say yes.
It is? Okay.
I don't really know what the cutoff is.
Well, all the more reason to invest, I suppose.
I could see that. Ancient Tomb's been printed too many times. Well, Ancient Tomb is older than City Traders. So
they're both Tempest Block.
Yeah. Ancient Tomb
Exodus.
Was Tempest, City Traders was Exodus.
Yeah. But, yes, I know Ancient Tomb got reprinted in the
Vault
Lands.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I guess I would expect City Traders to at some point be reprinted there as, like, a Judge Foil or something if it isn't on the reserve list.
I think that's a $50 card next week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, next weekend. So by the time, you know, Origins rolls around, I think you'll want to have the City Traders you're going to buy and start trading those out of 50. Because there was about a two-week period where you could still get Caracas for 50 on sites like Card Shark, and they were 100 on Star City. So
right.
That's stuff to move on. So I actually will credit your deck for just giving them the push they needed on City Traders and definitely Transmute Artifact going up. I would scour eBay for Transmute Artifacts. And
local game stores for sure.
Local game
too.
Stores for sure.
Those are probably like in their back like corner or something like with all the dust covering, you know, like the older cards that nobody ever really goes.
Yeah, it's in a book behind the counter or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, they wouldn't even notice that the price had gone up, let alone that they had them in stock.
Now I'm looking through the rest of the deck list. You know, Polluted Delta, obviously that's some money underground.
Yeah.
Now, Polluted Delta is not a card I think is going to go up again anytime soon because it's absurd.
Yeah, it just went up to 90, right?
Yeah.
Thursday's
got them at 100.
Okay, sure.
But I think Misty is about to go up because the spread is getting lower and lower on that. Places are starting to buy them for practically retail, which means I think Misty and Verdant, possibly Scalding Tarn, perhaps all five of them, you know, are due for a bump.
Yeah, there's a chance. I mean, they're already doing
from
pretty
like
good,
20.
But... I wouldn't be surprised.
They only went from 15.20 to like 30.35 now. If they, I think I see them at $50 very soon.
Sure. I do want to make one comment. The swamp in my deck was the worst land in my deck by quite a bit.
Wow. Okay.
So I don't think you're going to be losing too much value at all just by cutting the swamp for something else. It might even be better as like a vault. Vault of Whispers. Is that the black artifact land?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, yeah. So like cutting it for like a Vault of Whispers or maybe even a second island or something. And at that point, there's no reason that Polluted Delta needs to be in your deck, so you can play like any blue fetch land. So
excellent. Okay.
Option for the deck.
What's that?
Okay, good to know. I mean, well, for a slightly budgeted version of the deck, you know, 2,200 instead of what 2,500.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't actually own Deltas myself. I have to borrow them every week from somebody. So every week I have to, like, go around looking for somebody who's going to be at that tournament so I can borrow them from them. But I own quite a few of the Zendikar fetch lands. I ended up picking up a bunch of those when they were in Standard because I had a feeling that they were going to behave similarly to Deltas after a while. Or similarly to the Onslaught fetch lands. Rather.
Absolutely. I didn't think it would happen as quick as it did, but as soon as the
Agreed.
Jumped, the Zendikars quickly followed.
Agreed. I'm a little surprised at it. Like, I was surprised when Star City started buying them for, like, 50s, like, blue ones or something like that a couple months ago or whenever it was.
Yeah.
So.
Let's, let's just talk overall impressions of Modern Masters now that we've played with it.
I haven't played with it. I was too busy winning a Legacy Open.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, actually, Ruben wanted me to do a My Pack Your Pick this week, and it was Modern. I just, like, I have no idea about modern at all. Like, I did it anyway.
I got Kiki Jiki Pestermite tonight, and I'm just fucking...
Oh, jeez.
It's so much fun to fight people.
In limited? Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, in limited. Like, end of your turn, I'll play a Pestermite, tap your land. Okay.
And you're dead.
Kiki Jiki! Let me read that. Ah! Gotcha. Yep, I was just like...
I went 4-1 tonight with just, like, blue... I had blue-green just, like, value creatures in my deck tonight.
Your audio and is good occasionally, Corbin.
It, like, went 4-1. It was pretty good. It was just a bunch of card drawing and flyers and big ground dorks. But I drafted red-white last week, and red-white giant seems like the best deck in the format.
Yeah, if you
two ephemeral.
Huge Killer's Verdict at Uncommon is retarded.
Yeah, that's stupid. As soon as I saw that, I was like, why did they do that? That's so much life.
Yeah,
like, Ember decks are going to suck.
Well, I got Pathysis twice. Game 1 and Game 2, he had Pathysis for it when I played it, so I'm like,
I guess we're even.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Red White has the most powerful Uncommons because you get Cloud Goat Ranger, and if you actually are into the Giants build, you get Thunderclaw Shaman, which is the only ground.
Thunderclaw Shaman is dope. God, it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's just as good now as it was back in the Lorwyn block limited.
And like you're getting 15th pick blind spot giants too. That's the best part. Just like you did before.
Red white giants, and you get like white is the best.
Okay.
Didn't hear that.
Yeah. Anyone else Stephen Hawking on us?
Yep. But, well, I was gonna say, you know, the one thing I've noticed, like you guys are saying red white's the best, the one thing I've noticed about the set out of all the people is, it seems even the casual players, like, have that deck they really like drafting out of it. Like, this made it safe for everybody. I mean, I watched 8 casual people do a modern matches set. It was the most brutal thing I've ever watched. But it was also the most enjoyable experience watching these people draft these dirtly decks they never would have thought of. And half of them worked because, you know, they wouldn't kill each other in 15 turns. And I saw some of those intricate little interactions that this set has to offer.
Well, I mean, yeah, I was playing a really good...
Looks like your Hawks won the puckball game.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't want to freak out on the cast, because like, everyone on Friday is going to be like, yeah, we know. Game 2 tonight. So, yep, third overtime, Andrew Shaw buries it. So they're going to get a well-deserved rest tonight. But, I had a pretty decent arcane deck tonight, and I was just dirtling, and I lost to a big Rude Awakening. I was like, there's so much you got to worry about and look out for that, like, I just, you know, I've never drafted the Arcane deck and lost to Rude Awakening because it was Cami Block last time, and I just never had to worry about that. But, like, there's Storm possible, everyone takes your Glacial Ray, so you just, like, screw it. If you go Arcane, you're on the Dampened Thought plan. You're probably not dealing 20, you're probably having to deal 40 to their library.
Sure.
But I get quad dampened thought every time I go for it. Like, I get them late, I get them often. It's a lot of fun. But even, like, people are happy as shit to draft Thaladin Rebels and stuff like that. Like, even newer players can grok this draft format better than any draft format before. So, like, the really experienced players have that stuff they remember, and they'll build something complicated with, like, Domain or something like that. Or, you know, they'll go for the harder to play arcane deck or something like that. But, like, even the newer players can find something they, you know, that's intuitive for them to grasp, like something like mono green Thalids, and just really get there. So I like it as a. I was surprised how accessible it is to new players.
Yeah, it reminds me of Lorem and like, how tribal was. Like, you could be the only person at the table with elves. Like, I watched one of the most, no offense to this guy, but he was a fairly incompetent player. And I watched him just smoke the table. The first time he ever made it out of the first round of a draft, I like drop a game because he was the only person at the table drafting elves. And that's the way this feels too. Is like sometimes it doesn't matter how good or bad or how new or, you know, old the player is. Sometimes you just get that bag where you're like, this can't actually lose because I'm the only person drafting X. And you just went for it and it was all there. Like, I'm sure someone's going to pull that off a storm. I mean, I got to have fun with TGG Pestermite. I got to do that on turn 5 to somebody. And a blue-black deck that I was splashing red for in TGG, and that sounds absurd, but...
Oh, man. I felt really... I actually did feel good about it. I felt dirty, because I got my buddy Carl game 1 and 2 with it, and he was just kind of like, Magic's fun. That's like, what can you do?
No,
sorry.
I didn't feel dirty at all, because as the local players know, I did it to someone, Daniel Buzzy, who doesn't listen to the show, unfortunately.
I hate Daniel Buzzy. Oh, my God.
Wait, oh, I have oh, a story. Oh my goodness, please Please tell the story, because he was talking shit about you when I said that you were going to be on the podcast. Oh,
I drew into top 32 of Grand Prix Kansas City a couple of years ago, the one that Luis won. It was limited. And my rating, like, this was the last PTQ season where ratings mattered before this was the Planeswalker points. My rating was, like, 2050, 2060, something absurdly high like that. And I just needed a 2-0 drop a PTQ and then qualify for the Pro Tour. I played a blue, white, red, the Stoneblade, Splinter Twin deck, the hybrid deck, which was, like, absurdly good. And, won my first round, no problem. Second round, I get paired to Daniel Buzzy. And, I cast a Stoneforge Mystic on turn two, and then he archive traps me twice. And, a few turns later, I had no cards left in my deck, because, I could not really kill him fast enough. He was, like, archive trapping me and cloning, cast Haunting Echoes, like, all kinds of ridiculous crap. It was just, like, a joke FNM deck. And, like, after the match, I asked him, like, hey, man, I need to win this match. This is the finals of my PTQ. If I win this match, I drop, and I qualify for the Pro Tour. Would you please concede to me? Like, it would really mean a lot to me if you did that. Like, and he's just like, yeah, no, man, I'm here to win a PTQ. And he's like, you can still win the PTQ. You'll have a loss, like, which is obviously rough, but, like, you'll do good. Like, it's obvious that I was going to compensate him if he conceded to me. Like, I can't say anything, obviously, because that's collusion and legal. But if he does concede to me, there's no rules against me, like, giving him, like, well over $200 worth of shit, you know? And I figured, like, most people are smart enough to understand that. So, he is, A, not smart enough to understand that. B, didn't know me, so he wouldn't concede to me because he was a friend of mine. So, maybe, like, 10% of the room, I think, I would have been cold to if they would have beat me. So, that was beats. That was the second time? Yeah, second time I lost, playing for a slot that season. So, to Haunting Echoes and Archive Trap. Thanks, Daniel Buzzy.
He's one of my local players, and Daniel Buzzy, as much as I hate on him, he is the reason that I'm so patient and have gotten to the trade game the way I have, because if you can deal with Daniel Buzzy for more than a half hour without wanting to walk into traffic, you're a very patient person. I've learned the art of being able to trade with him, which is a very difficult thing to do, and I give kudos to anyone who can deal with Daniel Buzzy on a daily
basis. It's a good feeling, like, getting Dan to take my number on stuff feels like, for people who play, like winning a PTQ.
It really does.
And I've gotten him to take my number on stuff sometimes, and it feels damn good.
Yeah, but no, I understand your frustration. In fact, funny story last week of Daniel Buzzy saying he was going to be at the shop at 6 o'clock to pick some stuff up, and then he shows up at 9 o'clock and then doesn't even have cash on him, and then tries to meet up with me two other times in the week and also doesn't have cash on him. So, I understand Buzzy wasting your time, and in your case, you know, approach or invite. So.
Yeah. And a follow-up on the story, he did not win the PTQ, believe it or not.
With Haunting Echoes?
Yeah, his Haunting Echoes Archive Trap deck did not win the PT.
That's surprising.
Shocking, right?
It was very strange.
Like, Kenta came up to me afterwards, like, yeah, that dude rode down with me, I'm sorry, he beat you, like, with his joke deck, and I was like, yeah. That was my PTQ finals, and then it was like, what are you talking about? It's like, yeah, my rating was really high. I win one more match, I qualify for a Pro Tour, and his eyes just got really big, and he's like, oh, he just couldn't believe that it happened.
That's a perfect hit there, by the way.
Yep.
Was it Lipinski?
What's that?
I was just, who the person was there, was apologizing. I imagine it was probably, there's only a few people who will travel with Buzzy, so.
No, he said it was Kenta. You should pay attention, Ryan.
I got you.
You thought he was doing Chris Lipinski with a Japanese accent?
No, I didn't know what he was going for there. Like, I was out of it. I'm recording on a tin can, you gotta remember.
Now, if you're gonna record on a tin can and make us sound like amateurs, I get to clone you as much as I want. Those are the rules.
That's fine. I mean, I blame India tonight.
What? I couldn't hear what you said.
I said I blame India tonight, but...
Oh, okay.
Was that Comcast customer service?
Yeah, and then I finally got connected to someone in America, and then I spent a half hour on hold, and then he told me that they were supposed to deal with it when I was on the line in India. And then he just said, screw it, I'm going to try to tech mission out. So.
Your struggles are fascinating to me.
You're like Odysseus on an epic journey to get internet connection.
I really feel like it. I mean, I don't know what Odysseus did in the time when he was just floating across the water, but I really need to figure something out.
This is coming from Ryan, who
probably browsing Facebook.
Yeah. Ryan, who gives me shit for in the middle of nowhere, can't even get internet connection.
There's just nowhere in Lansing that's like 24 hours of HDMs, and I couldn't record in there.
I think if you're gone for 10 years, you probably don't want to check Facebook and see that your wife is now in a relationship.
Well, you get back on and you onto your page, and you go to the thing, it says in a relationship, and you click it, and it's just like a dead link. I'm pretty sure that's the keynote to. I've seen it happen to a couple of my friends, as people now actually break up that way. Like that's one of the most ridiculous things ever. Oh, but now that we have Corbin back, do we want to do our What's It Worth? Like?
Let's do What's It Worth.
Okay.
That's me being super excited about doing What's It Worth.
Okay. I kind of have to cheat this week because I need someone else to actually type in the card. So I'm not sure whether the card is going to be a bust or not. And I'll guess on the price of my own card because I actually don't know.
Oh, good. Yeah, let's do that. This will be fun. It's a double blind What's It Worth. I love this so much.
Yeah? Okay.
All right. I'll go first, I guess. I want to know what the Modern Masters price of Foil Dark Confidant is.
Foil Dark Confidant and Modern Masters?
I know that.
Yep.
Chris just snap knows it.
I don't.
Is this cool stuff?
Yeah, we'll start there, and if they don't have it, we'll move on to another website. So, I mean, trying to get cool stuff standards. A little less than Star City, usually.
Okay, I know the Star City price.
Cool stuff does not have the foil.
Okay. Well, then we will use Star City since that's the next, you know, best one. I think probably eBay would kind of be a nightmare since it's probably all over the place. Although if somebody wants to get that price, that would be helpful to know, too.
I'm going to guess in Star City Full Dark Confidant, one, gosh, I don't know about the Modern Masters cards are I haven't yet figured out completely. I'm going to say 130.
I think it's more than that. I think the fact that it's new art, all bets are off. So I'm actually going to say $200.
It's ugly.
Who cares? Like, some people really like Skrillex. And they're like, I got Skrillex on a card.
Should I guess? Because I know the answer. I actually looked it up like 3 hours ago.
I'm going to guess what, Ryan?
I'm going to guess 180, so then I guess you can just tell us what the price actually is.
It's 175 and sold out.
175.
So
Ryan,
you're close.
Ryan was close.
It's $25 more than the old versions.
Which,
I thought it would be less. That's why I went the other way.
Yeah, me too. I was kind of surprised.
Well, that's the point.
New art, all that. I mean, most people don't like the new art, though, I figure, it doesn't have Bob Maher on it.
Yeah, it's just ugly.
Right.
I mean, I don't really care for it, but I know a lot of people are like, this art's sick. So, I mean,
the Tarmogoy foils are exactly the same. They're both fives.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's so much.
There are some cards I have to admit I like the new art on. Like, I like the new Trigon Predator a lot. Trigon Predator.
The foil Trigon Predators look sick.
Yeah, they're like 15 right now, but they're probably going to come down a little bit, which is too bad.
That's what I'm saying.
The thing is, like, it's only in English, so, like, it shouldn't affect, like, Japanese foil Trigon Predator, you know, the original one. It shouldn't affect the price of that. Just because you can't get Japanese in Modern Masters, so that's good.
I'm browsing around. Caleb Derwood just wrote an article about things, and he mentioned how Transmute Artifact is good in Affinity and Legacy also.
Oh, okay.
So that might also boost the price some. I don't know. It's possible. It has more than one archetype. So.
Oh, excellent. So what we said earlier about that having an upward trajectory, that's just more... reassurance
more fuel
there.
For the fire, yeah.
Excellent. That's a good spec. You guys heard it here first, too. Can I go next?
Yeah.
I have one that's going to, like, really trip you guys all up. Maybe not. Okay, Cool Stuff, Inc. What do we got on Grizzlebrand non-foil?
Non-foil.
Non-foil Grizzlebrand.
I guess $8.
I'm going to get 15.
I was going to say 18.
Yeah, it's actually $14.99, so Ryan loses because he's off by a cent.
That's true.
You went over. Price is Right rules.
yep, I win.
It's 15. I thought you guys might come in low. I didn't expect Corbin to come in high.
Sure.
That's a card that I don't think is a $15 card.
You don't think so?
No, I think that's a $20 card.
Okay. Well, obviously I did too.
Now, spending 15 to make 5 isn't great, but it's better than my stock portfolio. and my 401k. So I don't know how long you'll have to wait for this to hit 20, but the fact that he's has no EDH appeal, because he's, is he banned altogether or just banned as a general?
He's banned.
Banned altogether. Hmm. Yeah, I can see that. He's degenerate. So
yeah,
I mean, it's just like
you're saying, when you a bargain's a little good in a format where you have 30 life. Interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
40 life.
40 life. Yeah.
40 life. Even better.
It's like what we were talking about earlier, like Avacyn Restored and Dragon's Maze. These third sets, like mythics from these, like Avacyn, Angel of Hope is worth like way more than you'd expect. Like, I don't really see these prices going down on the mythics.
They're going up. Like, Avacyn's up and up, and like I can't keep them in stock on eBay either. That's one card that I'll just trade for straight across. Whatever Avacyn's at, I'll trade straight across for, because I know the card that I'm trading out is going to be $3 or $4 less on eBay, and it's going to be exactly the same on eBay for Avacyn. So that's a card I target when I just want to eBayify my collection and turn it all into cash.
Avacyn is $18 on Cool Stuff for reference. I bet that's something a lot of people listening did not realize.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, every time I go to an SCG open or something and pick them up, it's $1.50 to $2 more than the last time I listed it.
Yeah.
So that's something I can track on eBay. And I'm just like, this card just keeps going up. It's great. Yeah, the EV on AVR packs has actually just surpassed Innistrad recently, which I thought was crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, the mythics are all good, and you've got a couple of decent rares. You got Restoration Angel, obviously.
Yeah, Resto.
Yeah, just like all those angels. Like, I think Bruna being $2 or $3, that's got to do something eventually.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with anything out of that was in Restored.
What's Agartha at right now?
Let's look it up.
Six?
I think she's probably 6 to 8.
This is a bonus, what's it worth? Sigarda's $6 on Cool Stuff, Inc.
Six.
Lots of copies left.
Probably a decent spec. I bet she'll be more than that once she rotates out of the format if she ever gets playing modern. She's certainly powerful enough to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, situations. This is a card that we speculated on in standard, and it went from, you know, $3 or $4 or whatever to the 9 or 10, and I got rid of mine then.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, you're good at Magic. I want to ask you a question. Why have we not seen a Mythic deck in modern?
Like
the Mythic Conscription.
Yeah, Mythic Conscription. Actually, interesting story. I played Mythic Conscription, the Nationals that Raptor bought won that Nationals.
Yes.
Cedric and I played a Mythic Conscription deck also, and Raptor, we felt like we had the...
I'm sorry, I gotta stop you. You're referring to Josh Utterlayton?
Yes.
Okay.
Josh Utterlayton won that tournament with Mythic Conscription, and Cedric and I also played Mythic Conscription at that tournament. And we felt like we had the best deck and best deck list in the tournament. And we translated that over to four set extended. We had a very similar deck list. And I think we would have took, Grand Prix Atlanta by storm with it, but Cedric decided to play it in a PQ online like a week before, to test it out, like to tune it and stuff. And then he ended up losing in the finals. So, like, worst possible scenario, he doesn't get the slot and the
decks and the decks out there, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so, like, people were prepared for it then. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a pretty solid deck. It's got a turn 4 clock. Lotus Cobra's a powerful card. Knight of the Reliquary's a powerful card.
Yeah, Knight of the Reliquary.
I mean, it's say that it seems to me that it operates, the combo aspect of it operates about the same turn as Pod combo.
Oh, I know the answer to that. Jason My Sculptor's banned. That was why the deck was so good.
Oh.
It turns more into like a Glass Cannon combo deck without the staying power of Knight. The reason that the deck was so good was because it ran 4 Jason Mind Sculptors and 4 Knight of the Reliquaries.
And Lotus Cobras, and you could...
You could get like turn 3 Jaces and play very easily.
See, I just remember in Standard I was running kind of a hybrid deck, and I got a few PTQ ninth places that season, Craig Wesco decided to drive to Michigan that whole season and PTQs. So I was running. That was like the last time I ever did well at Magic. I was running the Naya beatdown deck, but I had just one of Island, and then I had the Lotus Cobras give me blue mana.
Sure.
And I just ran three Sovereigns and 2 Conscriptions.
Okay.
Like you can hard cast Conscription on turn 5.
That's
and
cool.
It got there, but
right.
Like, looking at Modern now, I think it's like...
I don't know that you needed to play the Mind Sculptors, I guess is what I'm saying, but I don't know how good the Naya splashy blue version would be in Modern right now.
Geist of St. Traff might be okay in that deck.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean,
this is the most brewing we've ever done on Brainstorm Brewery.
Fair enough.
Here's what I think about it, is if your combo aspect of the deck,
probably operates along the same turn as Pod does, and when you're doing it.
That's
and,
true, but it's and, a lot more fragile.
Right.
Because you don't have the backup power of Jace.
Right, right. And, like, Pod, and, like, as the deck would currently be constructed, you probably have about the same backup plan as Pod does, and just play dudes and angels and all that stuff. Only your combo aspect isn't as good.
Right.
So that's kind of the thing to me, is that yeah. it's just a worse version of Pod.
One thing that I do kind of think is really sweet, and I want to try, I haven't really done much modern since the PTQ season ended, but I think that there could be a decent Flicker Wisp deck.
Really?
Yeah, like, Geist of St. Traps of Spirit, so it fires off on Flicker Wisp. You can get, like, what's
Flicker Wisp or Tallow Wisp?
Tallow Wisp, not Flicker Wisp.
Yeah.
So you got, like, turn 2 Tallows, turn 3 Geist, you can get yourself a Steel of the Godhead, slam it on the Geist.
Oh, that's so much fun. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Go
you
can also get, like, enchantment-based removal. The Shadow one?
Well, shit, back in the day we were playing Cowed by Wisdom and Block.
Temporal Isolation. Yeah, that's the one. You can use it as a pacifism. You can also put it on your Geist of St. Traft so that they can't block it, and you can still get your Angel through every turn. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's dirty.
Yeah, I think there's some pretty cool stuff that you can do with a Tallow Wisp engine in Modern.
That is a card to brew with I don't think I'd ever considered, so.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, but you didn't play back then. That was my deck in Block. And my buddy Jason Blackwood just totally broke that deck open. He's like, I jammed one Celestial Kieran in the deck. I was like, yeah, great. And I just, you know, didn't listen to him. And then he won the event.
Nice. I remember Rashad Miller and Cheeks, Matt Hansen. He doesn't play anymore, but he was pretty good. An extended before they changed. It was an older format. Jeez, I can't remember what year that was. Was that 2007? Might have been 2007, 2008, that extended season.
Yeah.
Right. They were playing like a green white Tallow Wisp deck. It had the Centaur in it from Judgment.
Genesis?
No, Centaur. Phantom Centaur. The Genesis isn't a spirit though, it's an incarnation.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was just going by the art solely.
Right, yeah. Phantom Centaur, and then Chameleon Colossus was another ticket for that one.
Nice.
Yeah, you could probably do some stuff with Chameleon Colossus still. Phantom Centaur's rotated, but I think there might be a deck there somewhere.
Very cool. We actually has everyone gone for What's It Worth? Or are we still waiting on somebody?
Not me yet.
Oh, okay. Well, don't let me interrupt you. We're on a roll
okay.
here.
So yeah, my What's It Worth is the price disparity on this card from Cool Stuff and Star City is shocking. Different.
Okay.
So we can do like a both. Like, what do you think it is on A? What do you think it is on B?
That is a great idea.
Okay. My card's Angus McKenzie. What do you think it is on Cool Stuff? What do you think it is on Star City?
50 Cool Stuff, 80 Star City.
I'm just gonna go with Jason. He seems to know what he's talking about here.
I think it's 100 on Star City, 60 on Cool Stuff.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty close. It's 55 on Cool Stuff and 100 on Star City.
Whoa.
So.
Man.
Yeah. I don't even have the internet.
The price difference.
I mean, all the Legends cards have just gone so crazy in the last 6 months or a year or whatever.
I think everyone just decided, like, look, we're never getting more of these.
Yeah.
It's just EDH taking off as a format. Like, Angus McKenzie's okay as a general, but there's also the whole, like, there will never be more of these factors.
I've still got a couple Gwendolyn the Corsis that I'm waiting to go up. I don't like to have quite yet. But, yeah.
Yeah, I sold a Gwendolyn for, like, $30 on eBay, like, very recently, and then wished I hadn't. So, these are cards that if you go into a store that has old cards just kind of in a book or something like that, they'll still have them for the old price.
Yeah, like $5 or something.
I bought a $9 Aiden Oakenshield, like, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, hit up not your local game stores, but, like, your comic book stores, you know, the ones that don't actually do magic.
Yeah.
They just have, like, a random binder in the back.
Yeah.
That's where you want to find those.
That's your best bet. You'll find the old Legend stuff like that. Or like the store Ryan and I went into in Miami where the guy was pricing from a scry from like 1990.
Wow, really? That's awesome.
Badlands are 12, but I'm not really willing to sell those yet. Oh, please. Yeah, excellent. I think you're right on Gwendolyn de Corsi. If it hasn't gone up yet, it's going to.
Yeah, it's about 25 right now.
What's that dude that makes like the Sand Warriors or whatever? Like even that thing went up.
I don't remember. I know, what's the, there's the guy, the 1-2 that's junk colors, green, black, red, Oakenshield or something?
Oakenshield, yeah.
Yeah, he's absurd, right?
Yeah, he didn't even have that good an ability. Like, the ones with no abilities have not gone up. They're still, like, $6. But those might be decent specs. They might go up, but, like, they don't have the playability, but they have the, this is never getting reprinted.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Aiden Oakenshield has, like, a good ability. I mean,
he really doesn't. He, like, for 3 mana, raises dead a guy.
Yeah, like, it's terrible, so, I mean,
it's not terrible, depending on how you build your deck.
Well, right, but, like, I mean, if you're playing Jund and you're playing EDH, like, surely, and you're dropping...
you'd much rather play something like a Crest of the Blood Braided or something like that.
Yeah, he's no Caridor. Like,
right.
Interesting. That was a good one.
We have to be careful talking about Commander on our podcast so we get in trouble.
Only because we don't know the rules.
We don't know anything about it, actually.
I've played Commander, like, 3 times. I played with Arkham Dagson and Azami, and nobody wanted to play with me anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I was just trying to win.
The point of EDH is not to win, and if you're playing to win, then you're doing it wrong, and no one will like you.
But I don't have fun unless I'm winning.
Well, exactly.
I'm not allowed to have fun. Is that the rules of EDH?
I don't know. I think
Chris can't have fun.
I think making the game go really long is fun for some people.
Well, oh, like the game went perfectly long when I played my zombie deck.
It went longer than anybody wanted.
Yeah.
I've got about 30 cards out of my Inami Death Aspect deck, so once I get that built, I will play it.
I have an EDH deck, and I've played it, I've played probably like 10 to 15 games in my life of it. And it's fine, and it's fun sometimes, but like, you don't ever get a win. People, you like tooth and nail, and you're gonna win the next turn, everyone just scoops. That's no fun. Like,
I disagree, I like making people scoop.
Well, like, it's whatever.
I like winning the game and then making them watch you win the game for 15 minutes while you, like, dirtle with yourself and draw most of your deck.
I actually like borrowing something.
And then activate Mirror Entity for 100,000.
They just scoop. It's rude.
That's why I borrow people's decks. That way, like, they know the power level of the deck. You get to learn a little bit about it, and you just don't ruin everybody's night.
I mean, mine's pretty fair, I guess. But I just kill everything over and over and eventually slowly win, which people don't seem to like.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's EDH.
It's grindy enough without you.
Yeah, but whatever. It's
EDH is the best thing that ever happened for the finance community, and we really need to respect it.
Because
EDH made such bad cards worth money that we should really thank EDH. If we could write a letter to EDH and thank it for existing.
Yeah, right?
We just talked to Sheldon.
We should, like, we owe Sheldon the thank you. A nice bottle of wine or something to say.
No kidding. I don't know if we can keep up with his wine taste, so I don't know if we can afford that.
I got a few decent bottles here next to me I told somebody tonight I had a wine cellar, and they're like, really? I'm like, no, but I have a cellar and there's wine in it, so.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely. Okay. There's not just wine, there's everything I own is in the cellar, but it is a wine-themed cellar. That much is accurate. Well, it seems like the cast is winding down a little bit. I'd like to thank our guest, Chris Anderson, for joining us tonight. Chris, why don't you tell us where we can find some of your work, besides watching you crush people in Legacy.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I actually just wrote an article. I don't write too often. I'm not the biggest fan of writing. It's kind of like, I don't really like it very much. It's not that I'm bad at it. I just, it's very easy for me to get writer's block. So it doesn't happen very often. But for this week, I ended up scraping together a couple thousand words, wrote an article that's on Star City Games right now. Just came up today, so I guess that would be yesterday for when you guys are seeing it. And let's see, I also just recently joined a different podcast, Glory Seekers. They're a relatively new podcast. My friend Rudy is in charge of that, and one of their guys had to leave, and they asked me to fill in for them permanently, so I'm going to be doing that for at least the next couple of months, and probably longer than that, so go ahead and check us out there.
Where can we find Glory Seekers? Is there a website?
I think it's on MTG Cast.
Okay.
Just search Glory Seekers in their search bar, and you can find that. Other than that, like, I used to stream a little bit. Haven't really done that too much recently,
Is
though.
That because your mother...
Yeah, right?
How'd you get your drinking under control?
No, that wasn't unrelated, but I felt like, I don't know, it may not be the best public image. Who knows? But yeah, I tended to drink a lot on my stream. I had a game where you would challenge me to a game, and if you beat me, I did a shot. So
seemed to watch.
It was fun. I enjoyed it, but
seems like that would snowball out of control.
Yeah, it might. So yeah, I ended up stopped doing that. But I might end up picking up streaming again later on. I don't know. Probably not that type of streaming though.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
On Facebook. Well, friend me on Facebook if you want. Add me on Twitter, _Cranderson_. So
we'll put that in the show notes.
Cool.
Because we have show notes. We're a professional cast around here.
Take ourselves seriously.
Sometimes.
I was hoping Ryan would say something just now and everyone could hear how terrible the audio was in contrast to me saying we were...
That was actually why I did my thanks as usual for pointing out things like the segment. So that's fine. And sorry Marcel, I couldn't be here tonight. He had some family issues arise. So he'll be back next week. And hopefully next week it'll be me and Corbin and Jason recording together. Unless we possibly wait and try and get all four of us to record together while we're in Vegas. It'll be a good show.
Yep, Ryan and I are actually going to leave on Monday and start the big road trip. So I don't know if we'll be updating from the road. If we do, we will probably be putting that audio on our website, brainstormbrewery.com. There are lots of ways to find this podcast. Other than the way that you found us and are listening to us tonight, we will most likely be leaving MTGCast, but you'll still be able to find us on brainstormbrewery.com, on gatheringmagic.com, and potentially other places in the future. We'll keep you posted. But if you go perhaps to our website and don't see that we've updated, check around all the different places, and Gathering Magic's actually your best bet to find the newest episode.
Yeah, we'll always have our newest episode to find Gathering Magic.
Which is a good website.
Anyone else have anything to say before we depart?
Go Blackhawks.
Go Blackhawks. I know a lot of our podcast listeners are in the Boston area. I'm really sorry, guys, but the Hawks just wanted it more, and they couldn't drop game one at home. So this is shaping up to be a really good series if you care about hockey.
Nobody wants to watch LeBron James anyways.
I hope Boston likes the Fratellis.
What a dagger. A Chelsea
dagger.
Enough excitement for one night. I don't know how to still end these things.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And Chris, thank you again for coming on. We will see you guys next week in Vegas, hopefully.
You bet.
Cool. It says the file size is increasing. I hope to God I got all that, because that was a really good episode.
Thanks.
Yeah, that would be awful if it didn't work, so.
Well, we at least got that conversation at the beginning. Oh, God. I'm so nervous, like, because one time Marcel was recording, he's like, oh, they didn't record, and then we just... That was the worst.
Awesome episode, yeah. Wanting to kill me.
Yeah, I just went and drank. What was that?
That was me clicking on. That was me clicking on ESPN.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.